Are you tired of hearing that publishing is filled with gatekeepers who are impossible to gain access to? So are we. That's why we're arranging for you to meet them at our 2025 Deep Dive Virtual Retreat, which is happening on the 1st and 2nd of February. We've reverted back to a weekend format so that we can accommodate as many of our listeners from across the world as possible. But if you loved the breakout room sessions and workshops from the 10-week deep dive, don't worry. We'll still be including sessions like those before and after the 2-day intensive. Plus, this year we're focusing on giving you access to way more gatekeepers, so expect to hear from agents and editors who've worked on some of the last decade's best-selling books. Subscribe to our Substack or follow us on Instagram so that you can be the first to be in the know as we begin to reveal our incredible lineup each week. Mark the dates in your calendars, especially the 29th of November, which is the early bird pricing registration day, which you definitely don't want to miss. Are you looking for the perfect gift for the writer in your life? Are you the favorite writer in your life and you want to gift yourself something awesome? Then come take a look at the Ultimate Planner for Writers for 2025. It not only allows you to plan for your regular day-to-day with hourly time slots, it also allows you to brainstorm, research, plot, outline, do scene planning, and vision boarding all in one. And it's available as a physical planner or as an e-planner. Check out Bianca Murray and find the Planner for Writers tab for more information. Remember to order early to avoid the end of year rush. Hi there and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm Bianca Murray and I'm joined by Carly Waters and Cece Lira from PS Literary Agency. We'll be kicking off today's episode with our usual Books with Hooks segment, after which we'll go to today's guest. Hi everyone, welcome back to another Books with Hooks segment for today's episode. As per usual, we are going to dive straight in. Cece?
All right, so this writer included a little paragraph for us, which was so great, but I'm going to start with their official query letter. Hello, Cece. I'm targeting you based on your interest in adult fiction and romantic comedies, and because you mentioned on this podcast in 2020 that you like socially awkward characters. I'm seeking representation for my 83,000-word debut novel, Diving for Black Coral, a coming-of-age story of a college student in the 80s. For comps, this book combines the detached observation of Black Swan Green, the dogged perseverance of Where the Crawdads Sing, and the sophistication of Superbad. Despite his introverted nature, 19-year-old Benton Wilkes arrives in Athens, Georgia, filled with excitement, ready to confront college with his fearless best friend. But an hour after they move in, his friend packs his stuff and leaves. Now Benton is alone and assumes he'll spend the year in his room. A lonesome loser. After numerous disasters trying to fit in, he finally discovers friends, finds his voice, and dances with Shelley. And then he faces a mysterious attack, a broken heart, and a room full of dead animals. When he's thrown in jail for a crime he didn't commit, he makes a new discovery, Black Coral. This is a story of kooky friendships, unsolved mysteries, and self-discovery. But Benton thinks it's about Shelley. Yes, she has stunning blue eyes, but she's also witty, speaks her mind, eats anchovies, and drives a stick. This verse sums up their romance. Her beauty and brains were his mission, but she vetoed his rotten condition. Then in jail, he found Coral and discovered the moral, will she welcome his second edition? Born and raised in the South, I currently live in Macon, Georgia. I earned a BBA from the University of Georgia and an MBA from Mercer University. I've had extensive writing experience in my IT career, including co-authorship of 2 books published by IBM. Although they weren't novels, the editor told me repeatedly, "Who do you think you are, a novelist?" Thank you for your time and consideration. Sincerely, Martin Willingham.
Awesome, Cece. Thank you. Will you give us the word count there and then your critique?
Okay, so this is 320 words long. I'm not counting the paragraph that was just for us because, again, that was just for us. I do want to begin by saying, yes, I love me a socially awkward protagonist. Like, I think that's so much fun. I'm just going to be very honest with you here. Your query letter needs a rewrite. I don't like saying this because I always feel like I have to put on my Grinch hat. Maybe I should get a Grinch hat, like an actual hat. But yeah, it needs a rewrite because you are including things that you don't need to include. For example, the paragraph that starts with, this is a story of kooky friendships and has that little verse. You don't need any of that. Like, remove the verse. It's so cool. It's so fun, but it doesn't belong in a query letter. And the paragraph before that, you do explain the inciting incident, which I believe is the fact that his best friend leaves him and he has no one. But you don't explain why. And I'm wondering, is it Benton's fault? Maybe we don't need to know why. And that's okay. But after that, all we get are big picture things. Discovers friends. Finds his voice. Mysterious attack. Broken heart. I don't know what any of that looks like. Remember that an agent should be able to shoot the movie trailer of your story based on your plot paragraph. I should be able to do that. And I don't know what that looks like. I do think it needs a rewrite. And I just think that after the inciting incident, focus on whatever happens to escalate the plot, specifically happens, and then stop at the major dramatic question. Right? You do tell me that he's thrown in jail, which I assume is the climax. And so if it is, keep that as the climax. But after that, I need a major dramatic question. Will he, whatever? Will they be able to, whatever? I also don't know what black coral means. I mean, in terms of like the significance for him, I don't need to know, but I have no idea. So yeah, I basically think that you are focused on writing a fun and quirky query letter, which as a reader is a joy, but I don't think that you're focused on writing pitch copy. And a query letter should read like pitch copy. That's really important. I also thought that the little anecdote in your author paragraph about who do you think you are, a novelist, that was really sweet. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, Carly, your take?
I agree with Cece on everything. I mean, I think the best thing that this person can do is go back to our Substack. All summer long, we did this thing called the Query Lab, where we posted query letters from authors who then went on to get an agent and then sell their book. And so you can really see patterns there and what's working. And even when you want to be a little bit, quote unquote, different or step outside the box, how you have to do that in order to achieve that. Because, you know, nothing speaks louder, I think, than success in terms of these query letters that were able to do the job of hooking an agent. So I suggest everybody, if you haven't, you know, joined the Substack, you can still go back and read those. They're on Fridays, I think for at least 8 to 10 weeks, we Query Lab series on Substack. So go check that out. Okay. In terms of the comps, I thought the comps were really interesting because they're kind of all over the place, in my opinion. I mean, the sophistication of Superbad, I will say I have not seen the words sophistication and Superbad in the same sentence. I don't know ever. So I'm just kind of curious about like how this author imagines their book in the context of pop culture and trying to place it, you know, within the 80s and kind of the coming of age. And I don't know, I think there's still a lot to be discovered here. So I think you might want to think about, you know, film comps might be more useful, like 80s film comps, as opposed to Superbad, which was a 2000s film comp, because it's not even recent. So I don't know, I got a lot of questions there. I also have no idea what black coral is and how it's found in jail. I also didn't want to Google black coral because I was like, I don't know if this is something like I don't want on my computer. I don't even know what this is. So I didn't Google it. How is it found in jail? Coral is obviously something about, you know, the water, and you have in the title diving for black coral. I totally thought this was some sort of like book set in a coastal town. So I don't know. I think there's just some alignment issues in terms of like the vision and the brand and the marketing, which this person did allude to in their kind of opening paragraph we didn't read. So I think this person in their head knows what this book is, but we're just not seeing it kind of come to life from a whole package perspective.
Thank you, Carly. Just a reminder to our listeners, there's a whole bunch of things that we do on our socials, on Instagram, and that we do in our newsletter that we don't necessarily do on the podcast. So we just recently had a great giveaway for Leon Moriarty's books. That's not something that we did on the podcast. It was on our socials. It was in our newsletter. So please don't think that just because you listen to the podcast, you don't need to be following us there to get access to additional content. We don't believe in the same content across multiple platforms. Each platform is going to give you additional content. So don't forget that. Okay, Cece, can you give us an overview of what was in those opening pages?
So we have a brief prologue of the protagonist in jail. Then we go back to his first day in college. His parents are saying goodbye. He goes to his best friend Tucker's room and is surprised to see him packing. And Tucker tells him that his girlfriend back home is pregnant, so he's dropping out of college and getting married. They say goodbye. Back in his room, his roommate is moving in and they meet, and the protagonist does not like him because he feels like one of those guys, a winner.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay. Can you take us through what your thoughts were on those opening pages?
Absolutely. I will begin by saying that, you know, we have a strict rule here about how many pages we review. We review 5 pages double spaced. And so this person did send in more. And so I stopped reading at the 5-page mark, to be fair with everyone. So starting from the top, the prologue. I actually think this is a smart prologue, having him start in jail, because it's very short and it is like curiosity inducing, because we go back and we go, oh my gosh, how is this college kid going to end up in jail? And it ends with 3 questions. I'm innocent, right? Why did I mention the horse? Why did they listen? What will Shelley do? I guess that's 4 questions, but like 3 lines. I don't think those are the right questions. I think that the questions need to be more specific. I think that the why did I mention the horse is great, not why did they listen. What will Shelley do? Too vague. You need to end with a very specific Shelley question, given her importance. So I don't know your story, but it could be something like, what will happen if Shelley finds the letter? Or, you know, will Shelley bail him out? I don't know what the question is, but it needs to be more specific. It can be, what will she do, in order to really like pique the curiosity. But I would keep the prologue, which is not something I say often. Okay, so now chapter 1, we're in college with him. As I was reading this, I noticed a pattern. And so we have him talking to his parents. And his parents, his mom says, you know, you're searching for something, but don't forget us. And he's like, searching, I promise, mom, but I'm not searching for anything. And then he has like an epiphany in that moment where he's like, I wanted freedom from my old life and experience it with Tucker. As I was reading that interaction, it felt forced. I don't think he would be having an epiphany in that moment. I don't think that's natural, especially an epiphany that's so vague. Like, I wanted freedom from my old life. That's too big picture. And the fact that his mom's intuition is getting things right feels a little plot convenient. His dad even calls it, oh, mother's intuition. So I would just tweak that interaction. But more importantly, I would add layers to it. So for example, when his mom says things like, I know you're searching, but don't forget us, is it typical of his mom to project her feelings onto him? Is it unusual? What does their relationship dynamics look like? This is a really good opportunity for you to show that. When he has his epiphany and realizes he wants freedom, he has that in interiority, which is great, and he doesn't say it, which is also great. Interiority and dialogue should never perfectly match. However, I don't know why he didn't say it. Is it because he's a nice person who doesn't want to hurt his mom's feelings? Is it because he fears consequences? Maybe they'll cut him off financially. Is it because they'll never understand because they lived their whole lives in a small town and they've never ventured into the big world? Something else, I don't know. I think it's really important to zoom out and show dynamics when you are showing an interaction, because that contributes to character. Another thing I noticed about the beginning is that you are explaining a little too much. So we have dialogue that reads, his dad is talking. Well, you always have Tucker. And then we have a pure narration line that reads, my best friend Tucker moved into a different dorm an hour earlier. That is pure explanation. I would include emotion or interiority or strong opinion in that sentence to remove the feeling of pure explanation. So for example, you could say the fact that Tucker had just moved into a dorm an hour earlier was a relief, but I wish Dad wouldn't bring it up because he thinks I'm so dependent on Tucker. Again, I don't know your character well enough to tell you what he would be thinking. You know him. But I think that if you include emotion and include a strong opinion, you're going to really, really elevate a whole bunch of sentences here. And I did mark a few for you. When he goes to Tucker's room, I didn't see any comparison. That's not realistic. Everyone compares, teenagers especially. So like, is Tucker's room better than his? Is it better located? Is it worse located? Is he like relieved that it's only a few doors down? Would he want more space, et cetera, et cetera? I wanted all of these little details of his opinion and his projections, because that really, really makes us connect with character. I also want to understand more of his dynamics with his best friend. We actually get a line on their dynamics at the very end of their interaction. I wanted that to be moved up, because while they're talking, I want to know, like, is it a love-hate relationship? You know, like, it should be messy, it should be complicated, because the most interesting relationships are, even if it's overall positive, right? I really, really wanted to see that. As he and Tucker are talking, I have the same notes in terms of like wanting more psychological acuity, wanting more in terms of the relationship dynamics, and I've marked those up for you. Our Substack supporters will be able to see these notes. I share questions that I feel like you could answer in the moments that you maybe could answer. It's obviously totally up to you, but I needed to connect with this character more, which actually brings me to my big picture note. The protagonist right now is reading as emotionally detached. And that's because you are not giving us deep, deep access into his psyche. When he buys the bike from Tucker, I don't know if he's buying the bike because he wants a memento from his friend or because he actually needs a bike. When he hears about his friend getting married, I have no lines about, you know, we've never talked about marriage before. We'd never even have that conversation because we're so young. Or maybe like, you know, they've always talked about getting married, but I never thought it would happen this soon. When Tucker shuts him out and doesn't open up, I don't have a line about Tucker always does this. Like, I've talked to him about it. Or maybe like, Tucker isn't usually like this. He must be really freaked out. And so it's, I want to see him observing his best friend and his parents. And I want to see how he sees his place in the world. You know, at the end of the day, that's so, so, so important for storytelling. When he meets the new roommate, he doesn't like him. That is very clear. This is established in an unambiguous way, but I don't think that it's established with the depth that it could, though of all the relationships here, it is the one with more depth because we get the whole like, oh, he's one of those guys, a winner, you know? So I do think that there's work to be done in terms of his psyche, in terms of the depth, in terms of the psychological acuity, socio-emotional framing. It's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun. So I recommend that you do that. And I hope that my notes were helpful.
Awesome, Cece. Thank you. Carly, what do you have to add to that?
I think I'm going to add two larger points. The first being, it seems pretty important that this book is set in the 80s. And yet, I didn't really feel like we were in the 80s. I mean, I didn't really know where we were in space and time. There was brand names that were talked about. But to be honest with you, some of the brand names are just like tried and true. You know, like L.L. Bean, I think, is one of them, which, you know, is around today. So I didn't really get a true sense of why it had to be set in the 80s. And all that kind of specificity that goes with it of just making sure that we understand that. The second thing is I want to talk about, and this is actually something that we talked about recently for our Substack, which is what do characters want and how do we know what they want? And so this person actually kind of wrote it all out, and I think it's too much telling. And so I'll read it for you just because we always say, like, what does this character want? What are they trying to accomplish? And so here's the sentence on the first page. I just want. I pause mid-sentence. What did I want? I didn't care about my grades, my major, higher learning, or the funky downtown music scene, but I wasn't apathetic. I did want something. I'd just never given it a name. In those few seconds, it hit me. I wanted freedom from my old life and to experience it with Tucker. I couldn't say that to mom and dad, of course. How about this? I want to get started on my career. And so that's just so much telling, you know, and there's so many other ways that we can communicate all of that, especially since this is probably a... Ideally, it is a kind of like literary coming of age novel because it's set in the 80s. I don't think it's a YA novel. So yeah, like that's an example of too much telling. You know, there's just so many other ways that we can communicate that and kind of build that into the first few pages through, like Cece was talking about, the socio-emotional framework and all of that. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of opportunity here for specificity and character development and scene work and setting. And so we're just kind of scratching the surface here. You know, it still feels like a really early draft for me.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, we are now going to move on to the second submission. Will you please read that for us, Carly?
Dear Carly, thank you for cultivating such a valuable educational platform for emerging writers. I knew I had to query you when I saw the two fun facts on your page are for love of triathlons and your pet. Below is my query letter. Narrated by Payne itself, title redacted, 85,000 words, is a literary fiction that combines grounded speculative elements in the tradition of Aisha Menierez Siddiqui's The Center with a nuanced critique of the wellness industry in the medical industrial complex, as in Ling Ling Huang's Natural Beauty and Megan Giddings' Lakewood. A creative reimagining of the sea cure prescribed by male doctors to hysterical women in the 18th century, title redacted explores the lengths we'll go to live a pain-free life. When cats purr, they emit vibrations at a frequency that promotes bone growth, accelerates soft tissue repair, and reduces inflammation in their bodies. But scientists have yet to unlock a therapeutic application to human injury until now. Almost a decade after first stepping on the track as a promising college athlete, Emily is now an indifferent bystander to her own life. All of her time, money, and emotional energy drained by the old running injury that keeps her in daily chronic pain. With nowhere else to turn when her job and relationship start slipping through the cracks, she enrolls in the Center for Feline Energy Learning and the Wellness Center, pioneering the research on the healing power of cat vibrations. There, Emily receives training in the center's pain abatement method and a gray tabby to purr her injury away. As Emily's pain lessens, set free from the jail of her own body, her world opens up and she becomes enmeshed in the drug-driven debauchery among the center's healed clients. But when she discovers that healing vibrations are made possible only by depriving the cats of basic needs, and that the center's staff of young immigrants are indentured to enact the cruelty in exchange for life-saving treatment for their loved ones, Emily must choose whether to continue her own treatment, despite the costs, or give up what might be her only chance to feel like herself again. Faced with my own career-ending sports injury, I searched for embodied stories that render physical pain in three dimensions on the page. Unable to find one, I wrote my own. A Washington, D.C. native immigration lawyer, I earned my B.A. and M.A. from the University of Chicago and my J.D. from Georgetown University. I was recently shortlisted for Unleash Lit's WIP Prize, and my writing has appeared in the Adroit Journal, the Chicago Maroon, and the Georgetown Journal of Legal Ethics. May I send you the full manuscript? Best wishes, Alexa P.
Thank you, Carly. Wow, that seemed like quite long. What was the word count there?
All right, we clocked in at 452, so I think on the longer side of something we've seen recently on the show. All right, so my first instinct is this sounds experimental. It says narrated by Payne itself. I'm like, ooh, okay. We're going to be going on a slightly experimental journey, which again, when everything's executed really well, everything can work. So I'm just a bit like, okay, sounds a bit experimental. I love a critique of the wellness industry. You know, I think these comps are super interesting. I think the hook is really interesting. This creative reimagining of the quote unquote hysterical women, you know, all of that is just super, super fascinating. And it's a good literary hook, right? You know, a creative reimagining. So I think we're all on point in terms of being on brand in that capacity. I was super curious about, I don't know anything about cats. I'm a dog person personally. I mean, I assume this is like slightly speculative because you say it's speculative in the second paragraph, but is that why cats purr? I don't know. I'm like, do I have to go down a rabbit hole of like what cats are actually capable of? Like, do we have to name what is speculative about this? Potentially, you might want to say what exactly is speculative about it. But I'm just throwing that out there just because I don't know that much about cats. I think it's really important here to know what her running injury is. I think a back injury versus an ankle injury versus like head trauma from falling while running, like these are all wildly different things and wildly different treatments. So I think it's, to me, it would be really important for us to know what the injury is specifically. That could be really important. You know, I'm going to be honest, I don't know if you're going to need a future trigger warning about animal cruelty, because I don't know how deep this goes. You know, I don't think you need a trigger warning or content warning in the query letter. I usually never suggest that, but you just might want to think about that for the synopsis or the manuscript. Again, just flagging that because I don't know how on the page things are. But yeah, I think your author bio paragraph is great. You know, longtime listeners of the show will also probably know that I had a career ending university sports injury myself. I broke my orbital bone in a soccer game and that was the end for me. So I totally empathize of like, you know, that ending of a identity and a career path that you maybe thought that you would have. So I can really feel that energy here.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, Cece, handing it across to you.
I want to start by saying that this person said, Carly, I knew I had to query you because of your love for triathlons. Carly, thank you for doing triathlons. You're really like upping our group's cool average, and this is really important. You know, like I'm for sure breaking it down, but yay, thank you. So I love the hook. Like the premise is really cool. I don't know if that's why cats do that, but it tracks. Like I don't think of myself as either a dog or a cat person. I love them both equally. So it makes total sense that that is true. The hook is amazing. Like this is a great, great, great idea for a hook. And you escalated it perfectly because you brought in the human element to it with the immigration situation. So like, this is really good. This is really good. This is really interesting. The people are horrible, obviously. The people at the center who are doing this, I want them to die a very slow death. I don't like them. But yeah, like this is a really, really good hook. So kudos to you. I also thought the same thing. I thought, hey, experimental, which by the way, I love experimental fiction, but it's really hard to pull off. Like some things are just harder than others to pull off. Experimental is high on that list. So agents are probably going to think that, but they have to because it's what you're doing. So you know, it's all about the execution.
Wonderful, Cece. Thank you. Okay, Carly, can you give us an overview of what's in those opening pages?
All right. So just to reiterate, it was mentioned in the query letter, but just to remind everybody, it is narrated by Payne itself, which again was part of the experimental piece there. We start with our character, not our Payne character, but our female main character at the doctor's office getting some medical treatment with some sort of, you know, needles in places and all of that type of stuff. So they kind of talk through that, you know, the pain scale with the doctor and how things are feeling in terms of the pain. Then our character says it still hurts a lot, you know, et cetera, still in a lot of pain. Our pain narrator is kind of explaining the way that they are working through medical terminology. Then our character, our female character, gets in the car, drives home to her apartment where we meet Greg, her partner. Greg is in bike shoes and kind of like clomping around the apartment in their bike shoes. And then our main character is at home. And that is where we end.
Okay. What was your take on that?
All right. So it took me a minute to remember, which is why I said that off the top, that it is narrated by Payne itself. Because I kind of forgot a little bit, even though I just read the query letter, when I saw I, and I was like, oh, but Emily is third person. And then I'm getting an I, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is Payne. First thing I wanted to say was kind of just around the doctor. It just says, you know, the doctor. They're not really like embodied. I don't know. It was just interesting to me what this doctor was trying to do other than relieve the pain. Because in my mind, like, don't physiotherapists do that? Like, unless you're at a really specific pain clinic with a very specific type of doctor, which I think that would be worth mentioning, you know, if it was like escalated so high, like you were at a pain clinic, it's just kind of like the doctor, not like the blank doctor in terms of the specificity. Because in medical fields, this would all be very, very specific. So I don't know. I was like, why wouldn't you be at a physio or instead? So I kind of just had some like scene questions that I think, you know, are worth mentioning. But because it's narrated by Payne itself, it's kind of like Payne is telling us from Payne's perspective what they're witnessing potentially, but it's kind of third person omniscient. I don't know. I have a lot of questions about how everything is relating to each other in that capacity. One thing I will say is Payne is obviously a very like physical experience. Anybody that has been in a lot of pain or experienced intense or chronic pain knows like how physical it is. And so trying to communicate something so physical and in your body on the page and repeatedly is really hard. Like I noticed the word pinched just repeated again and again and again. I'm concerned how many different ways we can talk about like pain itself and how it shows up in the body throughout the entire course of a manuscript. I just have a lot of questions about how that execution is going to come through. I also felt like talking about what a character's want, what does Payne want? If we are being narrated by Payne, what does Payne want, right? As a character, to me, it felt very just like one-dimensional. The Payne character, you know, voice or whatever was just saying, oh, I scraped this joint and the naughty fascia every time her right foot hit the ground. It's really just like narrating bodily movements, which to me, from like a reader's perspective, isn't as interesting as I want it to be. Because quite frankly, a play-by-play of somebody walking is not that interesting. So I don't know. I think there is a lot of potential here in terms of just a super interesting hook. I'm just worried about immense amounts of repetition, how we assign words to the physical embodiment of pain, and how much of this is going to be play by play. As I said, what the motivations of our narrator are, because if they're going to be guiding us through this book. They're a huge part of this novel. And I don't know, I kind of just felt like I could do without, to be perfectly honest with you. I didn't actually feel like Payne was actually contributing too much to my read of the book. It was kind of just bringing me out of the moment. So that's my thought.
Thank you, Carly. Cece, your take on it?
Okay, so I'll start with a zooming in thing and then I'll zoom out. The first line reads, Emily lay on her stomach, neck twisted to the side, left cheek pressed flat into the padded table, a large needle hovering over her back. This is a matter of taste, but part of my job on this podcast is to share opinions based on my taste. This line is pure narration. Your first line should not be pure narration. As I say this, someone's going, what about this book that does it? Yes, there's always exceptions. The best books start with interiority. I see this kind of line, all the time in submissions. Emily crossed the street, juggling a handbag in her left hand and a Starbucks cup on her right hand. Emily sat down to answer the phone on the third ring, shushing her assistant before saying hello. Emily, description, description, description. Movement, movement, movement. Something a camera could capture. I do not want that. I want interiority. It is your call. I think you want that too, because you want my brain to fuse with your brain right away, and that is accomplished through excellent interiority. Cerebral creative fusion happens through interiority. It does not happen in any other way. And so I think that you should rewrite your first sentence and change the entry point into the story. It's a zooming in note because it's like one line. And for anyone thinking, why can't you just wait till the second line? This is just how the life works. I don't know. People have the attention span of moths. Life is sad. It's 2024. I don't know. The zooming out note that I had is honestly quite similar to Carly's, so I'm not going to repeat myself. Like, the whole Payne narrating this is a great experimental idea, but because Payne does not have a motivation, it reads flat. I would either remove this whole idea and just have this be third person, like Emily's story, or you have to give Payne a personality. But then does Payne want to die? Because if Payne stops hurting Emily, like if Payne stops existing, there's no Payne, so it dies. Or does Payne want to live? So is Payne evil? It's like all these questions, right? Like, as it stands, it's not working. I'm getting very blunt with you, very direct, because I think that you want this to be as good as it can possibly be. I am not connecting with it because of this whole Payne thing.
Because Payne is a communication tool. Sorry to cut you off, Cece. Like, Payne in our bodies, it's designed to communicate with us, right? Like, Payne sends a signal to your brain, something's wrong here. So to me, Payne is a communication tool. Like, could be something sinister in terms of the intention to cause pain, to cause discomfort. But the ultimate goal of Payne is communication. So, like, I don't know. I can't figure out where the story is here, I guess, is my thought.
No, that's so true, though. It is a communication tool. But then do you want to, like, give it a personality? Kind of like an Inside Out, where, like, the emotions also have personalities, you know? I don't know. It's whatever you want because it's your book. It's not my book. But I have to be honest and say that in its current form, it's not working. So you either have to dial it way up and make it way voicier and give Payne all these, like, deep things, or remove it. I don't think that as it stands, it's working.
Yeah, I think giving Payne personality is the way to go if you want to keep it in this current form.
Yeah, but then also, if you give it a personality and it's a character in the book as a narrator, then Payne needs high stakes tied to it, right? What is it that Payne actually wants? And what is Payne doing to get what it wants in terms of how it tips the dominoes over? It can't just be the main character. It's going to be Payne as well. So that really complicates it as well.
I think the Inside Out comp is really smart. And I haven't seen Inside Out 2. It's on my list to see. I've seen one, which is phenomenal. But I think that's a really, really good example.
Go see it. It's really good.
Wonderful. Thank you so much to Carly and Cece, as always, for their wonderful insights. If you would like to submit to Books with Hooks, you go to the Shit About Writing and go to the Books with Hooks tab, and you can submit there. If you have submitted in the past and your submission wasn't chosen and you would like to resubmit, just wait. I think we said 4 months, but we can move it now to sort of 2 months. After 2 months, if it hasn't been on the podcast, you can resubmit if it has changed quite substantially. Right, we will do Books with Hooks again in 2 weeks' time. Next week, we are back to the author interview. Carly and Cece, thank you.
A reminder that this is an unscripted program and our conversations have been edited and condensed and is not a full picture of our feedback or conversation directly with each author. As always, refer back to our written notes for the fulsome picture. Carly Waters and CC Lira are agents at PS Literate Agency, but their work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly and CC on this podcast are solely that of them as podcast co-hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literate Agency. A reminder about all the ways that you can support us as a show: rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, tell your writing friends about us. We'd love to help as many writers as possible. And follow us on our Substack newsletter. Get our stacked newsletter on a weekly basis, bonus videos, articles, essays, advice, and more. You can find it at theshitaboutwriting.substack.com. That's theshitaboutwriting.substack.com.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes. Are you tired of hearing that publishing is filled with gatekeepers who are impossible to gain access to? So are we. That's why we are arranging for you to meet them at our 2025 Deep Dive Virtual Retreat, which is happening on the 1st and 2nd of February. We've reverted back to a weekend format so that we can accommodate as many of our listeners from across the world as possible. But if you loved the breakout room sessions and workshops from the 10-week deep dive, don't worry. We'll still be including sessions like those before and after the 2-day intensive. Plus, this year we're focusing on giving you access to way more gatekeepers, so expect to hear from agents and editors who've worked on some of the last decade's best-selling books. Subscribe to our Substack or follow us on Instagram so that you can be the first to be in the know as we begin to reveal our incredible lineup each week. Mark the dates in your calendars, especially the 29th of November, which is the early bird pricing registration day, which you definitely don't want to miss. Are you looking for the perfect gift for the writer in your life? Are you the favorite writer in your life and you want to gift yourself something awesome? Then come take a look at the Ultimate Planner for Writers for 2025. It not only allows you to plan for your regular day-to-day with hourly time slots, it also allows you to brainstorm, research, plot, outline, do scene planning, and vision boarding all in one. And it's available as a physical planner or as an e-planner. Check out Bianca Murray and find the Planner for Writers tab for more information. Remember to order early to avoid the end of year rush.